UK Wine Show, show number 206. South Burnett Wine Region with Luke Fitzpatrick from Cloverley Estates. G'day, and welcome to this week's UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're off to one of the small regions in Australia, in fact in Queensland, called South Burnett. We're going to be speaking with Luke Fitzpatrick about how they grow grapes and harvest them in Queensland's subtropical rainy season. In the spotlight, we're going to be looking at our wine poll. How often do you drink wine at home? Very busy week this week, very busy week. We're getting ready to take on some new team members. I think it's going to be 6 in all, so quite a big increase in staffing for us this week. But hopefully everything's going well. I'd like to say thanks to Steve Rowland. His Twitter account's Life's a Reach. He tweeted me and said, thank you very much for the nitrogen one we did with Tim and Siobhan last week, or the week before last, actually. He said it was one of the best shows in ages. So I hope I'm pleased he enjoyed it. And if anybody's got any ideas for some shows, do give me a yell. You can either tweet me at Winescriber, or you can email me at chris.scott@3050.co.uk. 3050 is T-H-I-R-T-Y-F-I-F-T-Y, 3050.co.uk. It's the name of our wine tasting business. So if you want to know more about that, look on our website. Got an ad straight up there at the beginning. This is a bit rough. Anyway, let's crack on with this week's show. And we're going to start off with our mystery, a wine region. Now, as usual, I'm going to give you two sets of clues, one now and one just before the interview. Then I'll give you the answer at the end of the show. One last thing before we crack on with the show. I've been harassed now for about 5 years by a company called It's Cold Outside. They're a web marketing company, and they call us up usually about once a month trying to sell us a product. We've asked to be backlisted. We've asked all sorts of things. But if anybody knows how you can get a company to stop calling you, I'd love to know. And also, if you use them or you've ever thought about using them, don't. It's called It's Cold Outside. They harass us. Sometimes they call 2-3 times a month and try and get us to use their service. Really annoying. I finally lost my rag today and nutted off at the poor guy. But I worked out my revenge. I called them back constantly, about 10 times for half an hour, selling in our wine tasting business to them. I figure if they're going to waste my time calling me, I might as well practice my elevator pitch with them. So quite a good idea, I think. Well, hopefully they'll stop calling us anyway. So it's called It's Cold Outside. Never use them. They're a horrible, horrible company. And they've been harassing us now for years and years and years. And they just won't take no for an answer. Okay, let's crack on with this week's show. And as usual, it's our mystery wine region. Our mystery wine region is one of the oldest wine producing towns around. It's also the name of the DO. The region's climate is strongly influenced by the Atlantic and sea breezes from the Gulf of Cadiz, temperature extremes in the coastal region. In summer, temperatures may be 10 degrees lower than inland, where they are often 30 degrees, occasionally 40 degrees higher as a result of the dry, dusty Levante wind. It's thanks to the porous white Albariza soils that the vines manage to survive the hot, dry summer months. The best Albariza soils, which include sand and clay, and some limestone, are on the surface. In between Albariza soils are more heavy clay known as Barreau soils, which produce fuller, coarser wines, and the sandy Arena soils, which produce double the yields but poor quality wines. Have we think about that. I'll give you another clue which should help most of you guys. It's a region that's very, very, very well known, but the clue was a bit obtuse to start off with. Anyway, I'll give you a clue just before the interview, but right up next we have the news with Jane.
Cheers, Chris. Authorities in the United States have introduced new restrictions on imports of Pinot Noir from the Languedoc following the scandal of the fake red bicyclette Pinot Noir in February. The new restrictions mean that importers will have to secure a declaration from the French government stating that the wine has been produced in accordance with appellation rules and French law. Regulatory body, the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, part of the US Treasury, has circulated these new rules to wineries, bottlers, importers and wholesalers across the United States.
Similar restrictions were put in place against Brunello di Montalcino back in June 2008, and they are lifted just in March this year, so you can imagine this will be on the boards for the next couple of years. What's the next story, Jane?
Well, the Co-op Group is planting a vineyard on its farm in Gloucestershire to produce a white English wine as part of its Grown by Us food and drink range. It will be another 3 to 4 years before the vines produce their first crop of Ortega grapes, and bottles will be available in store.
The Co-op is the second supermarket to plant its own vineyards. Waitrose did last summer. Now, the Co-op are big into small distances to market, and being local, that's a big thing for them. Which is fair enough, as long as they realise that growing grapes in the UK is a CO2 carbon dioxide heavy industry, using a lot of sprays to manage the wet weather. And as a result, does have quite a large carbon footprint, and it's certainly offset any of the carbon footprint that is resulting in shipping from, say, Argentina, Chile, or even Australia. So as long as they realise they're not being environmentally sensitive, but they are just growing their own grapes, not a problem. What's the last story, Jane?
Finally this week, a report by Data Monitor shows that UK drinkers are trading up to higher quality wines when drinking out at pubs and restaurants, but they're trading down when drinking at home. The research suggests that British consumers would rather splurge out on one good bottle rather than order 2 or 3 bottles of house wine. The upshot is they're drinking less overall, and this is likely to impact on the bottom line of the industry, despite offers and price reductions to drive volume. That's it from me this week, but remember to check out our website 3050.co.uk where you can get all these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. Interesting about Brits wanting to spend more when they're going out rather than staying in. This week's poll we ran is actually related to that. I don't know if they do that, though, or at least drink better quality wines. We all know that the price of wine is so much more expensive if you go out versus in. And I always tell people, if you're going to spend money on a nice bottle of wine, don't spend £10 at a pub or a restaurant on a £3 bottle of wine. Spend £10 at the supermarket or your wine merchant and get a £10 bottle of wine. You really will notice the quality difference. But this week's poll is all about drinking in as well. And the question is, how often do you drink wine at home? Now, the answers were quite a bit of a surprise. Every day, 22% said they did. 2 to 3 times a week, 43% said they did. About once a week, 24%, only when I'm entertaining, 9%, and never 1%. Now, with most of the people questioned consuming wine 2 to 3 times a week or even more, this is a rather healthy looking poll for the wine industry, and with 10% being not very regular or not at all, it's pretty low that people like to engage with their vinos. 1% who never drank was a bit of a surprise to me, given that we normally ask these questions either on our website, which is wine-based. If you never drank wine, why would you be there? Or at a wine tasting. So it's a fairly good chance they have had some wine recently at one of our wine tastings. I did read some comments, though, from notes. When we do our wine tastings, we give out sheets and we do the poll and we get some comments back from the tasting. And one of the ladies who said never actually made a comment that she enjoyed wine a lot more now that she's tried some with us and that she's probably going to drink a wee bit more when she's entertaining. So I consider that a win for the wine trade. The poll itself had 192 entries, which is great. And you can see the results of all our polls in our newsletter. We're actually going to be sending out our next newsletter on Monday or Tuesday next week. The last one went out a bit late, but hopefully we'll get back onto the right schedule with that. One of the nice things about the newsletter is that you get all the information. We also give you a spotlight with regions and grape varieties. And that's what I use as the basis for my mystery wine regions and grape variety clues. And next up, we have the second clue in our mystery wine region. So here's the clue, see if you can work it out. Our mystery DO, and the DO is a Spanish DO, is a triangular-shaped area in the southwest of Andalusia, extending from the town of Chiclana del Frontera to the southeast to Guadalquivir. I have no idea about the pronunciation on that one. Guadalquivir River, it's a river anyway, and the northwest, tapering inland. Within this DO, there are 3 centres for maturation, and that maturation is quite important. The region itself produces a variety of styles of fortified wines with 3 authorised grape varieties, Palomino, Pedro Ximenes, and Muscat de Alexandra. Have we think about that? I'm going to give you the answers afterwards. Key things are, it's on the Atlantic coast, in Spain, making fortified wines. That should be enough clues for everybody. Anyway, I will give you the answer after our interview, which is coming up next with Luke. And we're going to be talking to Luke about producing wines in a wet area, well, considered wet anyway. And the day I went up there, it actually just stopped raining the day before, and the area had been isolated by floods. The area, South Burnett, is inland and just slightly northwest of Brisbane. It's about a 2-3 hour drive in from Brisbane, and it's about an hour up from where my dad lives in the most unfortunately named place, Blackbutt. It's named after the trees in the area, by the way, if you're wondering why it's called Blackbutt. But South Burnett is about an hour's drive from where my dad lives in Blackbutt. So I popped up there when I was visiting my dad in Australia. But we're going to be talking to Luke about the region, the vineyards, and some of the unusual things they do in South Burnett to get their crops ripening at the right time to avoid the rains. So let's have a listen to what Luke has to say. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Luke Fitzpatrick from Cloverly Estates Winery in South Burnett. How are you, Luke?
Very well, thank you, Chris.
Excellent. South Burnett, wine region in Queensland, we'll get onto that in a minute, but just tell me quickly about yourself. You're a winemaker here. Where did you do your training?
Yeah, I've been a winemaker in the South Burnett region for 6 years now. I trained in, studied at Charles Sturt University in Wagga Wagga, and did my initial training in the Hunter Valley, Margaret River, and New Zealand.
Okay, so and you were saying earlier you did some work with George Festovich and Villa Maria.
That's correct, yeah. I was based in Auckland in about 2001 and worked under Michelle Richardson there.
Yeah, it was good.
It was fantastic, great experience. Yeah.
And what's Wagga Wagga? Where is that? It's south of Sydney, isn't it, Wagga Wagga?
Yeah, Wagga Wagga's a couple of hours outside of Canberra in the southern part of New South Wales.
Oh, okay. And is it quite famous or well-known for its wine school?
Yeah, well, 10 years ago, there was only two places you could study winemaking. That was Roseworthy, which is quite famous in South Australia, and Charles Sturt University in Wagga Wagga.
Oh, okay. Because I've heard of Roseworthy quite a bit, but not Charles.
Yeah, Charles Sturt University's been doing the course since the late 70s, so some pretty famous names in the wine industry have gone through there.
Yep.
But, overshadowed by Roseworthy and the number of people that have gone there, I guess.
Tell us a wee bit about Cloverly Estate. It's quite a big operation here, isn't it?
Yeah, Cloverly Estate first planted in 1997 in this area and is owned by the Heading family, who have farmed this area for about 110 years.
Yep.
They've been cattle farmers and dairy farmers. So the state government produced a report called the MacArthur Report in 1994, which was showing some alternative primary industries for this area. And the report showed that viticulture would be strong in this area and showed very similar climatic conditions to the Hunter Valley region in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
So with that information the Heading family planted in 1997. So there were subsequent plantings in 1998 and 2000. Up to 174 hectares of vineyard, which we are now.
That's quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, they didn't muck around.
Yeah,
they really planted a lot. So we're now trying to catch up so we can sell it all, I guess.
Yeah, have you got all the facilities you need for processing such a large number of or tonnage of grapes?
Yeah, we do. We initially outsourced our contracting down to South Australia to another winery in Queensland, and it wasn't until 2004 we established the winery here in the old South Burnett Dairy Building in the township of Mergan, and we're able to now process all our fruit here.
What sort of grapes do you grow?
Our core varieties are Chardonnay and Semillon, similar to the Hunter Valley, and Verdello is the other white wine that grows very well in this whole region.
Yep.
And in reds, Shiraz, Merlot, and Cabernet.
Yep.
And in 2000, we planted some, I guess you could call them experimental varieties for this area. Being a very new region, we wanted to see what would work, so we planted Petit Verdot, Sangiovese, Barbera, Grenache, Mourvèdre, Nebbiolo.
Yep.
And... And I guess they've all had their hits and misses, I guess. We also had Chambersin planted. Chambersin?
I've never heard that before.
So it's a hybrid variety that grows significantly in the Hunter Valley and in I guess, wetter areas. It's resistant to powdery mildew and downy mildew. So it's a good variety for a wet area. Just doesn't produce very nice wine. So that was... We just increased our viticultural skills and tore that variety out and just dealt with the issues that we've got. And I guess a lot of what we've been doing in this area is adapting to our climate.
Yeah, we'll talk about your climate in a minute because you've just done your harvest, from what I understand. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me when you're busy making wine. But it's
how long has it been raining here? 8 days, 10 days? So your harvest is right in the middle of your raining season, which most regions is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, no, you're right. It started raining 2 hours after we picked our last fruit.
Oh, that's so we lucky. Were.
It was a bit of luck and a bit of timing there. Queensland has fairly predictable weather systems, so you know, and that's part of managing our climate is knowing when it's going to rain and being prepared for it. I guess we were quite lucky. Look, we've also most people that come to our region talk about our high rainfall, but that hasn't been the case since 2005 and 2006 vintage. We had one rain event in those two vintages. We had no rain in 2007. We had moderate rain in 2008, no rain in 2009, and very small amount of rainfall this year. We're able to avoid most of it. So
during the season, but it's poured down since.
It's poured down since, yeah. I mean, Queensland's famous, I guess, for having their rains in November, December, January, the storms, and having low winter rainfall. And really what you want for a viticulture area is high rainfall during the winter and then nice, dry, warm weather, I guess, through the growing season. So we deal with that, I guess, and we've had quite unusual drought conditions the past 6 years.
When you do get caught out in the rain, how do you manage that? Is it a case of choosing the right varieties and spraying, or what's the process?
Yeah, protectant sprays are important, I guess, so knowing when the rain's coming, but also the varieties that we grow. Varieties like Vidello and Semillon that can be harvested very early in the season at quite low bomes, so we don't have varieties. We don't leave varieties hanging out there usually for an extended period of time. That couples in well with our slightly warmer climate. We have issues with retaining high levels of acidity. So by harvesting early, we can maintain high natural acidity. And I think in this country, especially with white wines, the tendency is to go for less ripe wines, fresher characters, more acidity, lower alcohol. So that kind of works in well with our varieties.
Yeah. Do you find, because you're picking quite early, your phenolic flavours may not be fully developed? I had a Merlot from, was it Moffat Wineries?
Is it Moffat? Moffatdale.
Moffatdale Winery, and their Merlot was quite herby on the nose. Is that quite a characteristic because of the early picking?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what we probably don't get in Queensland is ultra-consistent wines from year to year. And I don't mean in a quality perspective, but I mean, in exactly as you said, one year we may have to pick our Merlot a little bit earlier, so we'll get a little bit more of the vegetative characters. In a dry year, we have absolutely no issue pushing our reds out to 14.5 bome, 15 bome, and getting very ripe characters. So in an area like an area like Bordeaux in France, where you consistently have to deal with not being able to get things ripe enough, you get a very consistent character in the wines. And it, more on the vegetative side, Australia, I guess, has become famous for its sunshine in the wine and big fruit bomb wines out of areas like Barossa and McLaren Vale. And they have fairly consistent weather that allows them to do that. We just have to adjust for the seasons each year.
You're more season orientated, so you get variability from year to year to year.
That's exactly right. And you know, that's winemaking, and that's the beauty of winemaking, that you deal with the conditions you've got and make the best wine that you can make with those conditions.
What are the, you mentioned Semillon and Vidello on the white side that are nice and consistent. On the reds, obviously Cabernet Sauvignon's got a nice thick skin, so does that do quite well?
Yeah, the Cabernet does handle the weather very well. Small berries. It is a late ripener, which can make it difficult. But look, we rarely get herbal capsicum kind of Cabernets in this area because we do have the sunshine to be able to ripen it fully. And correct, Cabernet can handle the wet weather, as long as we're not getting 10 inches in 3 days.
Yeah. What about the other varieties, you know, the Shiraz and the Nebbiolo and Sangiovese and all those?
Shiraz is a pretty hardy variety, and, you know, there's not a region in Australia that doesn't grow Shiraz well. So, that's just something that I think any Australian vineyard and winery is expected to do well. And Shiraz is susceptible to a lot of rain, but we can handle that. So one thing we've done to get around, I guess, the rainfall and the difficult conditions in January and February with Shiraz is using a technique called double pruning or summer pruning.
Okay.
Which was experimented with a little bit in the 80s by a winery called Primo Estate down south, and it didn't work very well with them down there. Our region, it's quite suited to. The general gist of the technique is to prune in the winter as you do every other vine, and then wait till the first week of summer first week of December and prune everything off the vines again back down to two buds. So you're actually taking all the growing leaves off, you're taking bunches of fruit off, and you're forcing the vine to start their whole cycle again. So rather than ripening in January and February and harvesting that fruit in February, that fruit doesn't ripen until April, May, and we don't harvest that Shiraz until late May.
Oh, okay.
And even in late May, we'll still be harvesting that at 14 and a half Beaumet, fully ripe.
Yeah, because it's in winter, the best time to come visit the family is winter when it's still sunny and warm.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have ideal conditions for growing grapes in the winter. As I said previously, we don't have high rainfall in the winter months. So by, I guess, delaying that, there are consequences in doing that. The consequences are that we get a reduced crop because it's quite stressful to the vine. So yep. We get smaller crops, smaller berries, smaller bunches. But that's all pretty good conditions for making high quality wine.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, we've now used that technique for five straight vintages on Shiraz. The results have been fantastic. The first one we produced won the trophy for best red wine of Queensland in 2006. So we got good results straight away. And we've had a fair bit of interest shown around the country to what we're doing. One of the biggest wineries in Australia, Casella, has started trialling it based on what our results that we've achieved up here.
Oh, fantastic. Have you tried trying it out with any of the other varieties? Or
we have. We've tried it with Cabernet, and Shiraz is such a weed and is such a robust a variety that it can really handle that high level of stress. Cabernet wasn't as good. We did get a quantity off the vines,
yep.
But it wasn't really a commercial quantity. So we'll trial that next year with varieties like Chardonnay and Verdello and see how the white varieties can handle that.
Yep. Chardonnay is pretty robust.
Exactly. So it should be able to handle it. But I guess we don't have as big an issue with Chardonnay and Verdello and Semillon as we do at the Reds, because picking so early in January, we don't tend to have issues with rain or with yep. disease on those varieties. But certainly to see how it can increase the quality, I'd be pretty interested in doing some double pruning and see. And look, that technique has been used by other wineries in the South Burnett region as well.
Yep.
We joke here that we're probably the first wine region in the country to harvest Shiraz, and we're probably also the last wine region in the country to harvest Shiraz. So it's, that's very important when you deal with adverse conditions
yep.
to learn to adapt to them.
Yeah,
and that's
sure.
one way with one variety so far that we've learned to adapt.
Any other techniques that we've obscured?
Canopy management is very important in this area.
Yep.
We don't sort of subscribe to any strict, trellising system. We call ours a lazy VSP. So we've pretty much we've invented our own. So instead of actually having a strict VSP
system, vertical shoot positioning,
where all the leaf and all the canes are out of the way of the fruit, we allow about half the canes to be kept in that position, and the other half just hang outside the wire, just creating dapper light. So the fruit still gets some shading, some light. But most importantly, we can still get plenty of air through the vineyard, so that yep. if we do get a wet morning, whether it be wet from dew or wet from some rain, there's a good chance to dry out that fruit.
Yeah, you were talking just before we started recording that you get a bit of botrytis. What's that like? You know, because of obviously a bit of rain, but it was quite misty, for example, this morning. We got up this morning and it was very misty, and then it burnt off quite quickly.
This morning was perfect botrytis conditions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Misty, wet morning, and then breeze comes through, a nice warm afternoon. So we get that fairly consistently through March in this yep. area. So Semillon is a variety that's quite famous for botrytis, I guess.
Yep.
It's not something that we have had to deal with very much with our table fruit, but we put a fairly large block of Semillon aside. We don't spray it, and we allow the botrytis to set in that area. And that will get harvested usually around this time. So we harvested about a week ago our botrytis Semillon, which was a little bit early,
yep.
but we had excellent results this year with a lot of wet conditions. And look, that's our second year we've done our botrytis. So we're still in the experimental, but there's no reason this region shouldn't do very good botrytis wines.
And those Italian varieties, you know, the Sangiovese, the Nebbiolo that you've been trialling, anything start to stand out?
Yeah, those varieties, you know, coarsely grouped Mediterranean varieties.
Yep.
And again, with our area and with our climate, it's quite obvious that Mediterranean varieties should do well here. Not a great variety, but the other thing we grow here is olives. Yep. We have 37,000 olive trees on our property as well. So, we are in this Mediterranean climate here, very suited to olives, very suited to varieties such as Sangiovese, Barbera, Nebbiolo, and even varieties that aren't strictly Mediterranean varieties such as Petit Verdot from Bordeaux.
Yep.
has grown very well here.
Have you ever thought about Albarino from Galicia in Spain? Because it's really wet there and... It does quite well.
Yeah, there's a number of varieties we want to plant. The last planting we had was in 2000 when we put in this vineyard. And for the last 5-6 years, we've been in a pretty heavy drought in this area.
Yeah.
So Albarino is certainly one of the varieties that we want to plant. Fiano is another white variety that we'd like to plant. Quite a thick skin, a loose cluster. Excellent variety, very similar texture to how Chardonnay, so you can barrel ferment,
yep.
Quite a full-bodied white wine. So that'll be a very interesting variety once we get that planted. And some other varieties such as Viognier, go well in this area.
Yep.
And Muscat will clearly go well in this area, but not really for table wine.
What will you pull out to replace it, or are you not going to pull anything out, just plant some more vineyards?
We've got a lot of planting of Sangiovese, so we may pull out some of that and just reduce the size. We probably at the moment can produce about 30 tonne of Sangiovese, so we'll pull out some of that. I'd also like to change the clone that we use of Sangiovese to a stronger clone.
Yep.
But no, I don't think anything will get pulled out at this stage. We may graft over some Shiraz, which has excellent rootstocks, to plant some of these new varieties on, but no, we're quite happy. Nebbiolo, this is the third year we produced that. It's had fantastic results. It's a very tricky variety in the vineyard, very tricky variety in the winery. We've been quite surprised at the quality we've been getting from that. Grenache in the dry years grows very well here. Barbera is very well suited to our climate. The first Barbera we produced won a gold medal and a silver medal at the Australian Small Winemakers.
Oh, excellent.
So there was sort of encouraging results straight away.
And where do you sell your wines?
Most of our wine is sold in Queensland, so in Brisbane and the greater Brisbane area,
yep.
All the way up to Cairns and out to outback Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not selling in Queensland, the rest of our wine is sold either United States and Asia.
Yep. I've noticed we're in one of your warehouses at the moment. There's a fair bit of bag and box sort of stuff. Is it? Do you do a bit of bottle, bit of bag and box, any bulk?
I'm not quite sure what you're looking at, Chris. There's no bag in the box in this winery. Yeah, they're cartons of wine. So very pretty designs.
The design's too pretty. You've got like all sorts of colours on them.
Yeah, no. There's no bag in the box production here.
Do you do any bulk or is it all bottled then?
No, there is a bulk. We're 174 hectares. We planted quite a large vineyard in the late 90s before we'd established our brand.
Yep.
We're not the only winery or wine company in Australia that did that in the late 90s. So we've been playing a fair bit of catch up to get our brand to catch up with our vineyard size.
Yep.
So China's quite important there for growth.
Yep.
India and even the United States with the dollar receding is coming back online a little bit. We were strong in the United States in the early part of this decade,
yep.
But weakened off as the dollar nearly hit parity.
Yeah.
But we've had to sell a reasonable amount of bulk wine just to keep treading water, I guess.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Luke. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, not a problem, Chris. Thank you.
Cheers, bud.
Luke is a thoroughly nice bloke who managed to spend an hour with me in the middle of a very busy winemaking session, so I'm very grateful for him to that. I tried his wines after we'd done the interview just because they didn't have any wines available where they make the wines where he was, and I had to go to their tasting centre down the road. Tried their wines, and they had some pretty good wines, I must admit. Pricing was a wee bit high, but given it's a niche wine region, you can sort of accept that. So definitely, if you're ever in Brisbane, Granite Belt's definitely a good region to go and visit, but the South Burnett, surprising, but nice. Okay, let's finish up with our answer to our mystery wine region. It was, of course, Jerez, or Sherry, depending on your pronunciation. Mine is normally pretty appalling, so I'll go with Sherry. Hope you got that. The fortified wine from Spain and the great varieties Palomino, Pedro Ximenes and Muscata d'Alexandra are normally a pretty good giveaway. Also, the talk about the different soils is always a good giveaway for Sherry or Jerez. Right, next week, though, we're going to be moving on to Martinborough, New Zealand's spiritual home of Pinot Noir. probably the epicentre of Pinot Noir in New Zealand until about 10 years ago when Central Otago, I think, wrestled the crown from them. Being an Otago boy, I am a bit biased. We're going to be talking to them about birds, nettings, and a region that's close to my heart. It's where myself and Jane got engaged. I took her out to Martinborough Hotel, a very nice hotel in Martinborough, and I popped the question to her there. So I've got a soft spot for Martinborough. And just to finish up with, as normal, we've got our mystery quote, and this time it's from a guy called Thomas Love Peacock, an English satirist and author. He says, "There's two reasons for drinking. One is when you're thirsty to cure it. The other is when you're not thirsty to prevent it." Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.